Streamlabs. Hey, we're on the air. That was faster than I thought. Hey, we just lost Darren Drader. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the BAMF podcast with the ghost of Darren Drader, who I hope will return momentarily. Jacob Blackman is my co-host. Hey, Jacob.
Hello. Killed Darren.
And Owen KC Stevens talking about Spelljammer and Dragonlance. Go ahead, Owen. Sorry.
I was just saying, hey, folks, and blaming you for killing Darren.
That's it. I didn't kill Darren. Darren's become one of the Force. Darren's just sleeping. He's pining for the fjords.
Did you send Darren to a nice farm upstate?
There's lots of other Darrens there. He can play. Frolic in the sunshine. And he can play Spelljammer because it's coming back. How do we feel about that?
I mean, I am happy. One of the reasons I'm happy is that Spelljammer is very much a different play mode for D&D. It is, you can take the same basic rules and have a very different experience and a very different tone. And I am all for new options and new things to bring more people in. Also, of course, that's D&D in space. I do a lot of stuff for Starfinder, which is in some ways Pathfinder in space. So it seems to me like this is a case where a rising Spelljammer may raise all ships.
I am on board with that turn of phrase, sir. So, cool. So Wizards, I mean, people have been murmuring about, you know, next 5.5 edition, or are they going to go 6? And did they surprise people by going with Dragonlance and Spelljammer? Or did you guys kind of see this coming?
Sorry, guys, computer crash.
No worries. I'm glad you're okay. They were accusing me of killing you or sending you to a farm upstate. And I was like,
with other Darrens where you could play and frolic all day.
Well, I just think it's amusing because a lot of people were complaining about they teased us with, you know, their April Fool's joke was Spelljammer again. It's like, I knew Spelljammer was going to be coming someday because it was such a popular setting. And, you know, they've teased us aplenty with some of their those arcane articles that I can't remember the proper name of because my brain is floof right now.
Unearthed Arcana.
Thank you. And we saw some previews of some very Spelljammer-looking things there. And so I was pretty sure we'd be seeing it sooner rather than later. I'm happy we're seeing it sooner.
Mm-hmm. And Sunokin, one of our frequent commenters, good to see you again, sir, says, I grew up reading Dragonlance and I really hope they don't ruin it. Never got into Spelljammer, though. And I think like everyone else on this call, I also grew up reading Dragonlance.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I did not grow up reading Dragonlance. I didn't run into Dragonlance as a noteworthy thing until I was an adult. It was out there, but it was not the vein of gaming that I was into.
Yeah, it was like my little brother and his D&D friends were hardcore into it. I still remember one of his friends went as Raistlin for Halloween in school and would sit in the back in the class and just kind of clutch his staff and cough violently. And if you knew, you knew. And if you didn't, you're like, what's wrong with that kid? And Sean Vera says, good evening. Hope everyone's excited as me for Spelljammer. And I think we're all pretty excited for Spelljammer.
I am. But I got to tell you something, though. I'm having some issues with what they're doing here. First of all, they've mentioned this Astral Sea a few times. And I don't know if they mean for this to be a replacement for Phlogiston. But I'm not really in favor of changing the mechanics of the Prime Material Plane. I also feel that $70 for a slipcase containing 3 64-page books is not really the best value. I'm still going to buy it, but...
Okay, so let me ask you, Darren, do you feel Wizards of the Coast is a charity or a public utility?
I don't think that's the question. The question is, how much money do I want to spend for a product?
But so, you're going to spend it. So the amount you want to spend is less important to Wizards of the Coast than the amount you will spend. I mean, it is difficult to make a living in the RPG industry. People at Wizards of the Coast do quite well. Everyone else is struggling. One of the reasons is that products aren't expensive enough. So if Wizards of the Coast raises the cost of their products and that raises the standard so that the rest of us can raise our prices, to me, that is a good benefit to me for that product being more expensive. Also, boxes are incredibly expensive at the moment. So slip cases are incredibly expensive at the moment.
I feel like we're mostly paying for cardboard there. You know, but they could have done one big book, which would have been fewer pages actually than like say what's it called? Odysseys of Theros, which goes for a lot less. You know, most of what we're paying for there is cover. And
I mean, I
find material more valuable than cover.
Without looking at their project, we don't know what we're actually paying for. I like to believe, since they're hiring up, that one of the things we're paying for is for Jake Tondreau to have a job.
Friend of the podcast, Jake Tondreau.
Which is why I brought him up. I feel that since RPGs are so horribly underpriced, when you compare them to anything else that takes that amount of time and effort and work to put into them, I am absolutely not prepared to say that, hey, when the 600-pound gorilla, who perfectly well can make a product for less because they print 100,000 copies instead of 2,000 copies, decides it's time for the price to go up, I actually believe that that benefits the entire industry, myself very much included. If I don't want to spend that money for that product, I just won't get it.
I mean, if I start making more money in RPGs, I might be able to stop my OnlyFans channel. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that. Hey, let's see what Sean Vera has to say. Hey, I'm Sean Spelljammer. I'm seriously thinking about getting the BNG Platinum Edition. What is that? It'll be my first. Not to mention, is that the Bundle of Grime? Not to mention in the WitKids Spelljammer collection, even though I don't use many, it's like $1,000 Canadian.
So perhaps they're underpricing it at $70, since there are people willing to shell out $1,000.
Well, the WizKids minis have been getting ridiculously high in price, especially if you consider that them next to other companies and how much plastic is going into them. WizKids is charging extra because they have the nice license. And, you know.
Well, and that license costs money.
The license costs money. But I do agree with Owen in the fact that, yes, the industry is hurting. The price increase, I'm perfectly fine with the $70 price tag on this. I was honestly expecting it to be possibly more, like 80. And I would have been fine with that. For what we're going to get and the value involved, I believe that the product is worth that much. Because I've seen how much goes into producing games. I've produced adventures myself, and I haven't made the money back on that adventure. That one adventure that I've produced. Because I took a tally of how much I wrote into it and how much art I put into it. And it's been, what, has been like 7 years since I put out that adventure, and I still haven't made the money back on it.
I was afraid you haven't part people from Mars when you did for me. And I was like,
No, I'm talking about Superpowered Legends Disaster Day, the big adventure I did. I've done a couple of small adventures since then. I would have to look to see how much I've made back from those.
I personally think small adventures are the way to go, just because you can get people the impulse buy, and because you're selling fewer because it's a GM product. But has Monte Cook proved that you can sell RPGs at a luxury good price point? Because I feel like maybe he did.
Monte Cook proved that Monte Cook can sell RPGs at a luxury price point.
A good answer. Yep.
Yeah. And Monte Cook did that by producing really good stuff for a really long time. And he proved that point with Tolis, if nothing else, right? This is not new for Monte Cook or Monte Cook Games. Now, he's got a very dedicated following, and he managed to do this a lot less by being a cult of personality than some people, right? You're not constantly seeing Monte Cook podcasts where he's saying, it's your boy, Monte Cook, and I'm going to tell you why the universe is terrible and only my stuff is good. And by the way, I think his brain would melt if he ever tried to actually do that through mine. But instead, he's simply producing good stuff that is creative and interesting and radically different from what other people are doing and producing a high level of quality. But
you know how much money you and I could make if you would do that voice and parody other RPG podcasts? Talk to me after the show. We'll figure something out. Sorry.
All right, that's fine. I can happily I can happily produce stuff. I think what we have to look for is what are going to be the disruptors that make the current business plans not work. For example, I recently ran a Kickstarter where I had a lot of people say, hey, is this going to be on Fantasy Grounds? I only wonder if it's going to be on Fantasy Grounds. And I'm like, well, I'm willing to make a stretch goal for Fantasy Grounds, but we got to get the basics first, because turning these words into a Fantasy Grounds product isn't free for me. And the response was, well, I don't want to back it if it's not going to be on Fantasy Grounds. And that's fine, but I got the same response from, I don't want to back it unless it's going to be on, pick your VTT of choice, right? And each and every one of those is their own process. I can't create, it's not like making a PDF where any PDF reader can pick it up. So I am more worried about the price point not being $70 on the consumer's end, but the barrier to entry going up to needing a part-time programmer, coder, or whatever you want to call the person that reformats virtual tabletop formatters, so a VTTF. My margins don't cover that at the moment.
I don't even understand why people put that much of an emphasis on that, because it's not hard. You know, if you've got the PDF, it is not hard to capture the screen, fit it to your virtual tabletop, and put it there yourself. You know,
they put that much emphasis on it because they have a choice. As long as someone is putting the stuff on there that will save them that 2 minutes of frustration, they will pay them the money instead of paying me the money and doing it themselves.
I've got a setting I sell for, we've talked about the after for Savage Worlds. We made a lot of money. We had a fan who was like, hey, we'll put you on Fantasy Grounds. We're like, yeah, sure. What the fuck? Go for it. And then we made in some quarters more money from the Fantasy Grounds product than I do from the Dead Tree or PDF product. Now, given I'm going POD, I'm not doing an officer print run like some of the other publishers might, but I was shocked and amazed at the number of people who are lining up and just because it's a little more convenient, a little easier, want to get it for Fantasy Grounds or whatever other VTT. So it's
and Fantasy Grounds becomes their store of choice, right? They're not going to drive through anymore. They're not going to the Paizo.com store. They're not buying stuff maybe through Amazon. They're going to the Fantasy Grounds site because they're thinking, well, let's see if what I want is here. Oh, it is. Well, then I don't have to go anywhere else. And they're not going to put in that every button click that you require for a consumer to find your product. Like 90% of them drop off rather than click a button. And that's 2 seconds of effort.
Yeah, it's like tribal tattoos in the 90s. I didn't understand the trend, but damn, a lot of people were into it. So.
And unlike tattoos, this will be temporary and something else will come along in 5 years, 10 years. God help us, 2 months. There's no telling. My business plans from when even I launched Rogue Genius Games 8 years ago are irrelevant. I have to do totally different things now, or I cannot make enough money to make it worth my time. Kickstarter is part of that. Crowdfunding in general, print on demand, and I feel like if I don't start getting stuff up on virtual tabletops, I will become irrelevant. I will be a dinosaur. It's one of the comments that is hurtling towards my planet.
Dragonlance coming back. How do you guys feel about that?
I'm in favor of it.
Okay.
It depends on where they're going to put. It depends for me on where they're going to set their story. Are they going to restart things like they've pretty much been doing with a lot of the other settings? Because you know, if we're just going back to War of the Lands, then I've heard that story. I know the nostalgia button is there, but I'm not sure I'm as interested in that one.
Yeah, so I'm happy it's there, and one of the reasons I'm happy it's there is that it's an iconic part of the D&D / TTRPG landscape, and there are people playing who weren't alive when a last edition of that game came out.
Yep.
And I would like for them to have the opportunity to connect with that story. That doesn't mean that I'm going to get it. I'm getting Spelljammer. I will find a way. I will run a GoFundMe. Poor game designer, help me buy this book. Dragonlance, we'll see. But I know people for whom Dragonlance is right after air, water, food, and shelter, and maybe above shelter on their personal pyramid of needs. So I think it's got a really devoted fan base. I think it is one of the things that could break out. And, you know, there was a Dragonlance movie that is generally considered bad. The D&D movies that have previously existed are all generally considered bad. And we're getting a new D&D movie with big stars and big names and hopefully a big improvement in total quality. Dragonlance is one of the things I could see, you know, Netflix saying, hey, we're going to do a Dragonlance animated series instead of trying to do it all into our movie, or HBO Plus or Amazon Prime or any streaming service as they battle for content. So I think in that regard, it's a valuable IP, and seeing it gather dust kind of pains me.
Now, I know Joe Manganiello is a huge advocate for making a Dragonlance movie or series, because he really believes that Dragonlance is the Star Wars of D&D. And if it could actually get out there and be shown properly and be done well, it could turn fantasy movies around.
I agree with that.
And I think that's the space Hasbro wants to be in eventually.
Well, I mean, it's the space Hasbro is in now. Well, they just want to be there more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, you know, having with Transformers, that's licensed to somebody else, right? That they, you know, that their big bite there is merchandising. Same thing with G.I. Joe.
Well, they get a cut.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, Hasbro doesn't want to become a movie company. Hasbro has already gone from being a toy company to being a tabletop game company quite by accident that happens to make toys, because Wizards of the Coast makes more money than any other part of Hasbro. I think that if you went to them and said, hey, we will give you exactly as much money for Dragonlance as you have made on the movies for Transformers, they would sign that deal in a hot second. I would hope that Michael Bay would not be the director. And that's actually not a slam on Michael Bay. I enjoy explosion opera. I'm fine with that. There are things for which explosion opera is an appropriate take, and there are things for which it is not. Now, if we want to bring him in for 1 5-minute segment for a movie when dragons are attacking each other, that I can get behind. But for the rest of it, there is actually a story and some character development and some nuance in Dragonlance. There may not be a bunch, but there is some. And it would be a shame for that to get drained out to just see people blowing things up and cutting them in half. Although I'd still watch that movie.
So
periodically your door materializes behind your head, and it's like a portal to the hellscape behind you. Yeah,
I know.
I
don't know why it's doing that today. It must be something to do with the platform we're on.
It's getting a little wonky sometimes. We kind of segued into talking about the industry in general, which is always interesting. But my big concern about Dragonlance, just to focus on the subject, is I remember so many DMs back in the day who were like, goddamn Kender. No, you can't play Kender in my game. No, don't ask.
Okay, one of my issues with the Dragonlance series, and this was a huge issue, especially reading it even when I was young, is I had a big problem with the fact that there were so many races in it that were just, I'm the same race as these guys, but I'm stupid. Gully dwarves, stupid dwarves. Kender, stupid halflings. You know, that we're an entire species that's all about kleptomania. We need some improvement here.
It is just about this far from racist humor, right?
Yeah.
We're making up some races it's okay for us to make fun of, but it felt weird even then, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
Darren, Owen, what do you guys think? Are you guys in favor of racism?
Of course not.
I am opposed to racism. I am, in fact, at this point in favor of anti-racism. I think just not being racist isn't good enough anymore.
Yep.
So it's a legitimate question I'm willing to field. I am largely opposed to racial essentialism in games, right? So if you say all Rodians are bounty hunters, all Kender are kleptomaniacs, all orcs are savage killers, I have a significant problem with that. Yeah. I like to believe that this is true of the people that I know who are actually working on these games at Wizards of the Coast. And I believe we will find that while there is some cultural norm that Kender come from where relocating objects to your pocket is considered not to be a crime, that it will not in fact be all Kender are as part of their DNA kleptomaniacs. There are cultural norms that just make people do weird things that if you connect to the culture and you note that the culture has a reason for that weird thing and it only seems weird to us and it functions, is not racism, especially if you don't then point and laugh at it. If you say, hey, orcs have a really fierce fight or flight reflex because they live in a deadly land and they respond to it different ways. But one of the things that happens is that what you might think of as a lighthearted joke by tickling them, they see as an attack because anything trying to wrap their arms around them in their homeland is bad. That isn't to say that orcs are inherently violent. It's to say that they are both physiologically and environmentally conditioned to do different things and have different responses. I find it interesting sometimes when, full disclosure, I'm from a Christian background. I consider myself a Christian. One line of Christianity literally believes that when we have a cup of wine, it becomes blood and we are drinking blood, even though it looks like wine. That's normal. And then you have another religion that comes along and says, well, our statue weeps milk, and people will mock that. Well, that is certainly no weirder than our culturally norm within Christianity of transubstantiation. Darren, you now have 5 hot minutes. Go.
I think that it really just comes down to individual agency, freedom of choice, that type of thing. When you've got a race that is always something, because it's biological or it's conditioned or whatever, every time you run into it, it takes on certain characteristics. It robs them of their freedom of choice as individuals. And I don't see anything wrong with saying that if you normally run into these, they might have these characteristics because that's what they're culturally, you know, conditioned to do. But they're not all going to be like that. You're going to have some who are going to just be like, no, that's not what I'm about. That's not what I do. There's even a really well-known precedent for this in D&D, you know, Drizzt. He is a dark elf. He is not evil, you know. I agree with what you're saying. You know, you can make it so that, you know, sure, you can stereotype these guys based on what people commonly think about them, and that might have something to do with the way that were brought up, conditioned, society, whatever. But it's not a straitjacket.
Yeah, cool. I fully agree with all of that.
And I think one of the things that made the Dragonlance series as popular as it did, especially when it came out, is considering a lot of the fantasy at the time was very low fantasy. If you look at the popular fiction, you saw things like monsters and wizards in it, but they weren't whoosh boom wizards. They weren't I'm throwing fireballs and lightning bolts wizards. They were, oh, drink this potion and it'll enhance your strength. Oh, I shine a light and it drives the darkness away. Raistlin was a whoosh boom wizard.
Yeah, I was just gonna say Raistlin.
So it really helped represent what D&D playing was like. You know, you had big magic spells. You were fighting monsters and dragons and all these sorts of different things. And that's one of the things I think is what made the novels great and popular at the time. And especially the long-term epic story that it was as well.
And to riff off of that, one of the ways that they made it feel interesting and not just like D&D was that, especially early on, there were limitations, right? There is no clerical magic. Depending on where you learned your magic, there are certain schools of magic you may not have access to. there are minotaurs, and it's not a minotaur in a cave. It is a army of minotaurs marching up over the hill, so that you get to use minotaurs in a whole new way. And then you add to that riding dragons. I mean, I did grow up reading Dragon Rider books, so I think riding dragons and fighting from Dragonback is sort of iconically one of the things that you want to do in fantasy, and a lot of fantasy RPGs shy away from it for the very reasonable cause that dragons are powerful, and as soon as we put you on one, you may well end up being the Jedi of your setting, and no one can compete with you. But having that as a inclusive part of the goal, I think, is interesting and appealing. I believe that we will have Kender and Gully dwarves and minotaurs, but that they will be handled differently. The main thing that interests me about a new Dragonlance is what do they do to take Dragonlance and make it match Wizards of the Coast's current philosophy and aesthetic about gaming?
Mm-hmm. They really have to go back to the classic story, don't they? I mean, that's, when you think of Dragonlance, you really think
they don't have to. They don't have to.
Okay.
Dragonlance, from what I see, could be that mass combat setting, if you want it, because that its stories really help with that.
Yeah, I'm not. They're in a no-win situation in a lot of ways as far as pleasing fans. There are a group of fans that, if you don't go back to the beginning, they will rage flip the table and say, "This isn't Dragonlance. I wanted Dragonlance, and you know, you've given me Fifth Age Saga Edition. This isn't. I wanted something new. I didn't want something different."
Yeah, and those fans can go to the DM's Guild and buy the old ones.
Right,
they're still available.
But, you can get them in print. but they will not be Fifth Edition. And there are similarly fans who don't want retreads of everything they've already seen and done before. Those are two viable, sizable, often vocal groups of fans. And I have been the person for different properties that has tried to, or been on a team that tried to plot a course between those two extremes. And it's not easy. My guess, and it's just a guess, is that they will try to do it as a setting and say, hey, here's a setting. Here's enough information that can do a lot of different stuff. Okay, and then we're going to zoom in. And at least to start, this is what we're giving you the most support for. But if you've already done that, we've now given you enough other information that you can do something else.
So I think that Dragonlance is kind of interesting because you've got the War of the Lance, which obviously we all know. Legends doesn't even take place within the same time period. So that one doesn't really count even. You got Fifth Age, which is a lot longer. And then in this period between the end of the War of the Lance and Fifth Age, you've got the new trilogy that Wise and Hickman are putting out. It's supposed to take place right after the War of the Lance, but probably before even the beginning of Legends, right? So I suspect that what they're going to do is they are going to give you options, but that's a very convenient spot to place something new, because Fifth Age is wildly unpopular. And, you know, the War of the Lance being fairly popular, there's always this question of, you know, what did happen next? Well, not a lot happened next, but maybe there will be more now that they're doing these novels. I don't know. That's my guess. The other option I think they could go with is they could say, okay, War of the Lance happened, Fifth Age happened, that's over, the gods are back, and now there's this new age after the Fifth Age, which still has all this setting stuff that leads up to it, but this is, you know, a brand new era that we haven't seen before. I could see him going that route too.
And, you know, it's the same issue that Amazon had with Lord of the Rings, right? There's the Lord of the Rings trilogy is out there in multiple editions that are well-loved and hold up really well, and The Hobbit is there. So if you're going to do some new Lord of the Rings stuff, do you retread everything that we've seen? Because the first Lord of the Rings movie came out more than 20 years ago. It would not be unreasonable to say, hey, it would not be unreasonable to say that there are people paying for movies who were not alive when these last came out in theaters. The same thing is true of Dragon Age, that there are people who are, and WotC has more information about this than I do, right? If they're looking at it and they're like, hey, the primary demographic of people that are buying stuff from us are all born after 2005. 17 and 18 year olds are the majority of our audience. I don't know if that's true, but if it was, then they can look back and say, well, these are people that haven't been exposed to the War of the World, War of the Worlds, to the War of the Lands. Now, if you do Tripods versus Dragons, I'm in, but I'm not trying to
add Martians. We got Spelljammer coming up. I will totally do Tripods.
Yeah, Tripods versus Dragons and Spelljammer is perfect. And your tripod might be piloted by a giant military hippo. I think there are a lot of different takes they can go for. And I think that what makes the most sense, honestly, which will be invisible to us, is for the team to go with the take that they are the most passionate about. Because however much I might like to see something totally new for Dragonlance, if no one there is excited to make something totally new for Dragonlance, they are totally excited to take the classic stuff and update it to a modern take, a modern aesthetic, and a modern rule system, that's going to be a better product. And I might shake my fist at them and say, this isn't exactly what I wanted when I said I wanted something. but as a creator, I know that when you are invested in and interested in something, you will make the best version of that thing. Which point, obviously, all of our wheel spinning on what we think they ought to do suddenly becomes irrelevant. But
okay, but I'm just saying, if you own a licensed property, don't you want to do the most well-known story to appeal to the fans of that? And you don't have Dragonlance fans under the age of 35 or 40. Just my two cents.
I think you do have Dragonlance fans under the age of 35 or 40.
I agree.
And now, I don't know if that's the majority, but I think you've got them. The novels can still be found in store. They're engaged with the role-playing game. And one of the interesting things about Jacob, Tripods versus Dragons, Spelljammer. Look at
as soon as the Spelljammer book comes out, I'll start working on that.
I could easily see, and I'm not saying that they should do it, but I could easily see people at Wizards of the Coast saying, hey, there are fans of the novels, and they are probably not wanting to replay the events of the novels. Right, that's not the fun part of a role-playing game, is to say, well, we know what everything's going to happen, so we'll just do it ourselves. The fun part of a role-playing game is striking out into the unknown. So I could see an argument to be made that fan base exists and it would be best served with new content. That's not my guess of what's going to happen, but if it did happen, I would not think that they had made a horrendously stupid decision.
Cool. Hey, this has been a fun conversation. I feel like maybe we have plumbed this mine, plumbed this vein in this mine. I'm working hard to get a mining metaphor here, guys. I want you to respect the effort, if not the result. So, any closing thoughts?
I am excited for upcoming D&D products. I look forward to supporting them and making my own products based on them.
I am super excited to see where this goes, and I am interested to see if this is Wizards of the Coast testing some form factors and some settings prior to their D&D update.
So I honestly don't buy a lot of Wizards 5th edition books. I buy more third-party stuff, mainly because I'm more interested in monster books or adventures that are different than what Watts has been doing. So I will say that both of these products, regardless of price, I will be picking up, and I am excited for them. So maybe it's just nostalgia talking. Maybe it's a little bit curiosity, but I think they're doing a good thing by bringing them both back.
I would agree. I am looking forward to it. And hey, look at this. One of our commenters is weighing in saying it's time for that intro-outro music. And I did forget it for the intro, so hang on just a second. We'll close the podcast with the classic intro-outro music. Once again. Thanks for tuning into the Fan Podcast. Appreciate our guests, Darren and Owen, for coming out this time. Always nice talking to you fellas. Jacob, thanks for showing up the co-host. And we will catch you all next time on the Fan Podcast.